Well, it's hard sometimes to fall in love, I know. There's no rest in peace, drink to ease the soul.
Hi, this is Drew Dixon. I'm hanging out with my dude, Donald Jenkins, on Nashville Hits, Collecting Dust.
Hey, man, Drew Dickinson. I always want to say Dickerson. Always.
It's close.
Every time, I don't know why I want to call you Drew Dickerson.
I totally get it.
Drew Dixon.
We could call myself, we could call it Dickerson if you want, if it makes it easier.
Hey, I've been called a lot worse.
Text. That's fine. Okay, yeah, totally.
Do you have any nicknames?
No, sadly.
Last time you were here, you said when you walk onto a basketball court.
Yeah. Dirk for Dirk Nowitzki, Lurch. I tell you, that's it. I'm like, now all these horrible nicknames from my childhood are haunting back to me. Lurch.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, nah. Fabio, because of the hair.
Have you ever had short hair?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Growing up, I would always like, I'd grow it out, then shave it off, then grow it out. It was never this long. So right now it's like, you know, down to my, past my shoulders, but, yeah. Growing up, I'd always grow it out really shaggy, then shave it off, because I was always playing sports, you know? So I'd grow it out just long enough to where it started getting in the way, then shave it off. Then once I got to college, same deal, grow it out even longer, then shave it off. And then after college, I was just like, you know what? I'm going.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for coming back in, dude.
Thanks for having me, dude.
Everybody loves you, and everybody loves your voice, your talent. It's just unique,
thanks,
honestly, which is cool in general. There's a lot of unique talent, obviously, in Nashville.
Totally.
Tell you, it's so much fun. I've had a blast recording all these, and every single episode that I record reminds me of like why I do it. I really am doing this for everybody else. I promise you, everybody who's listening, I'm doing it for you guys that live outside of Nashville. But if I was to really be honest, I'm selfish. I'm doing it for myself.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's fun. You know what I mean? It's good to be a part of.
Right. Really. I mean, who wouldn't want to like just get up, turn on the microphone, invite some of the most talented people really in the world. I live here in Nashville and, you know, cut up, have a great time, and then go, by the way, sing for me.
Me right now. Yeah. It's just us.
Right. In the most manly way possible. Yeah. Right. Like,
if we're going to make eye contact with me the entire time you sing, that'd be great.
Drew has yet to look me in the eye, but this is getting really
I've been
awkward.
Staring at my feet the entire time.
Promise I'm not a creeper. Oh, that's fun. Well, hey, listen, I've got some questions that not every episode, but I at least at some point like to ask three main questions. So, to give it a little structure and to make sure that we really get to know everybody.
I'll try not to bomb them.
Well, you know, there is a pass or fail.
Oh man.
So, and I am the ultimate judge and grader.
Yeah. Okay.
So it depends.
God bless post-production. You know? That's good.
Oh wait, I didn't tell you this was live.
Oh dude. I gotta go.
This thing came up.
Oh,
right.
Man.
The hot and ready's calling you right now.
Dude, did you know literally at all times?
If you heard his other episode, we talked about how his love for hot and ready's, which you're not the only one.
Thing. No, of course not. But I'm up there. You know what I mean? I'm up there amongst the elite of enjoying a good hot and ready.
I have a feeling that somebody from Little Caesars is going to hear this, and you're going to be the Jared of Little Caesars. Wait. All right. That may not make sense
now,
anymore.
Current events is,
okay. That
let's
didn't
not call
really,
it the Jared.
Let's not do that.
I'm going to be the Drew of Little Caesars. I mean, that's all the new Drew.
Right?
Boom. Right there.
You could be the face of Little Caesars.
Little Caesars, get at me. At I am Drew Dixon. Right there.
Yes. Shameless plug there.
There it is.
And not, you said it was $5.46.
Yeah, that's right.
They could probably pay you to be the face just to have unlimited hot and ready.
You don't have to pay me a thing. Literally just give me a card that says this dude gets whatever hot ready he wants. That's all I need.
Well, it was nice knowing you, Drew. Yeah. So
it's nowhere but on and up from here, I feel like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Free hot and readies. I'm doing that. Then I'm dropping off the fam. I'm quitting music. I'm done.
Hey, where did Drew go? Well, he actually bought this island and all he does is eat hot and readies.
Entire infrastructure is just based off a hot and ready currency. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The other fun part about doing this is like y'all sing and have, you know, very creative and write songs, but like y'all never lack for like fun conversation. all I do is talk. Well, I just don't sing.
I feel like it's mostly just because we have so much just ridiculous inner dialogue in our head.
That's what I'm talking about. Just like, my only job, which is not hard, is just to get that started.
Right.
Because I feel like you fly off the cuff so much anyway.
Totally.
Yeah. You literally walk into a room and you have nothing. And you come out with a finished song.
Totally.
And probably a lot of words are thrown out in that writer's round that are like
no sense. Yeah.
And it's got to be funny. I at one point, as soon as I establish some credibility or trust with some of y'all, I'm going to see if y'all let me come into an actual writer's round.
Dude, you'll be shocked at probably how it depends on the one. Like some of them could be very boring.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it's a bad song. Some of them literally just sitting there in silence for like 15 minutes at a time. And then someone throws out a line. And you're like, nah, let's keep going.
I want to do a, because in my mind, and like I said, I've been in for like 5 minutes, didn't want to interrupt, just new friends. And then I was just like, y'all do your thing and I'll leave.
Yeah.
But in my mind, it's just gotta be funny. I feel like there's some stuff that are said and the people look at you like, did that really just come out of your mouth?
You never know until you say it out loud, man. You never know. It's like, it's in your head. It could go one way or the other. Cause you always want to preface it with that too. You're right with like two people, one, you know, one you don't know so well.
Right.
You're like, all right guys. So this could be bad, but it could be really good. You say the line. And as soon as you're halfway through the line, you see the look on their faces. And you're like, all right, I'm not even going to finish it. That was dumb. Sorry.
But I feel like that's what makes a good writer are the people who are willing to say that. You know, totally. A lot of people aren't. That's that vulnerable thing of like, if I say this, what are they going to think about me?
Yeah.
But then the song would never get written.
Exactly. Very good point. Yeah.
But in my mind, if I can find those people that have that thick skin and are okay with it, because it's got to be hilarious. Sometimes, not all the time.
Yeah. You're exactly right. You know, yeah. But, it's a crazy process, man. And,
I'm gonna figure out where I can like commentate.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like a nature commentator almost.
I'm gonna commentate a writer's round, somehow figure out where y'all can't hear me.
Oh yeah.
Maybe I'm like in behind a glass.
Yeah. That would be amazing.
And then while y'all are writing, I'm going to, there's my next idea, Drew.
There it is. Yeah.
I am the writer's round commentator.
I like it.
I mean, if you can commentate golf,
oh yeah,
you can commentate a writer's round.
Like, oh, he hit the ball again. Like, yeah, dude, I'm pretty sure you can find something to talk about in a writer's round.
Oh, that's the next.
I like it, dude. That's
I like it. Now it's going to be like, the writers will be like, no, you're not accommodating our writers, right?
Dude, sign me up. I'm okay, there. Perfect. I'm with it. Done. Yeah.
Drew's my first one.
Woo.
Nice.
I got a lot of business ventures going this morning, man. I got Little Caesars. I got a writer's round commentary.
Just, I'm also a walking hook. Stick around me. I'm an entrepreneur walking hook.
There we go. All
Something will be happening before this day is over. Awesome. What I do is make things happen. I don't know.
Fantastic.
If you do.
I dig it. I dig it a lot. Yeah. It was just when you were saying it's so funny, just like how off the cuff and just how weird it gets. Like we talked about Little Caesars literally creating a society for me for like 5 minutes.
That's right.
Just now.
That's
awesome.
That's how our brains work.
I dig it.
There's What's a song that? In there somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. I'm not a songwriter. I'll let you do that. But I do have like these set of questions that I want to ask you. It's just totally. Three of them, but right. I ask everybody and I like to hear everybody's, what they think of, I guess. So I know you are from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You went to school in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I know you played sports.
Mm-hmm.
How old were you when you like started pursuing music?
Pursuing music.
Or maybe just start.
I would say, I started playing when I was like seven, man. I was very, very young. My household was very musical. My mom was in the choir and my dad was a total on like, you know, the free love side of the 60s and just like loved all the music that was with it. And so there was always music playing at my house and all that sort of stuff. So he had an old classical guitar that, you know, had holes in it and all this sort of holes where there weren't supposed to be holes. And
probably sounded great.
Yeah. I mean, it was awesome, man. Nylon strings, all that stuff. So that was my first instrument that I picked up. Then the next was, a little toy drum kit. And then it was a bass guitar. And, when I was in eighth grade, I decided that I want to stick with guitar. And so I kind of focused in on that, kept playing. And even before then, you know, I was trying to play and I was so bored with lessons that I just couldn't sit through learning one chord a week, that sort of thing. It's just tedious. So, I started kind of teaching myself. And by then, God, I feel like this makes me sound so old, but by then the internet had evolved to a state where you could look up stuff like guitar tabs and guitar chords and stuff like that. And being able to look up a song that you enjoyed
Wait, how long did it take to download?
Like 3 days.
Download.
Oh man, the AOL like screeching sound.
Yeah. Right.
Just being able to like find a song you enjoyed. And by the end of the day, really learning, and I wouldn't learn anything intricate, you know, by the end of the day, being able to put together a song that you could recognize, that was encouraging. So it encouraged you to keep going. So, yeah, that was back in early high school. And then once I got to college, I really started playing out in front of crowds more. Because once I was 18, I was actually let into some of the clubs that I could play into. And so I did that. And then it was all just kind of a long process of, beginning to play, not really knowing how to, but then pursuing it further. Once I got to college, that was a very roundabout way of saying it's been doing it for a while, but yeah.
Well, okay. So knowing what you know now, all right, if you could have coffee with yourself, I don't know if you drink coffee, but
have a Dr. Pepper with myself.
If you could have a Dr. Pepper with yourself, there's another plug, by the way, if you want to be the
fake. Man, dude, I'm killing it today. I'm crushing it.
Hey, Little Caesars and Dr. Pepper, and you're done. But if you could, go back and talk to your younger Drew, what would you tell that younger Drew?
Let's see. I'd say, man, I would emphasize how important networking is and about how easy it can be. So many of the opportunities that I've been given in Nashville and Athens, all that stuff, were not based at all on my ability to play music. It was entirely off knowing someone and them either liking me as a person or just enjoying my music just enough to where they would put me in front of other people in order to give me an opportunity to play. And that was cool. And I was always very appreciative of that. Like in college, the summer after freshman year, I got to play once a week residency at a bar in Athens. And, it was totally because like the door guy randomly got introduced to me. We hung out a few times and then he told the owner of the place about me. And so then I got that guy lined up and on. So like that was one thing. And especially when I got to Nashville, I didn't realize how important networking was. And it really, it took a while just because the act of networking can feel so contrived and so just like, so shallow almost. Cause I was so scared of going into conversations thinking, hey, what is this person going to be able to do for me? What can I do for them?
Right.
As like an immediate purpose for the conversation. Well, that's not it at all. You go into a conversation, you just talk to the person, see if they're cool. See if you enjoy them, if they enjoy you, and if you enjoy each other, cool. Hang out a few more times. If somewhere down the road and you both can benefit from whatever, and that's awesome. But if not, then don't worry about it. And you just kind of move along.
Yeah. And, I think that takes for a lot of, especially newer artists or writers that move to town. They're, obviously very ambitious, right? And
totally.
And not that they're wrong or me, you, or whoever, we've all been there, but it's, I think, an inner need to press. Mm-hmm. Like there's this, and I guess a sense of urgency is not a bad thing, but really what you're saying is like, when it comes to networking, it needs to be a quality relationship, which usually takes patience, right?
Exactly. Very well said. Yeah.
So when it comes, and it's hard sometimes, to say, hey, you know what? We might need to hang out, like you said, a couple of times.
Yeah.
That may take a month or two.
Yeah. Or longer, man.
Or right.
Dude, seriously. Like I remember when I first moved here, I went to a writer's round at this place, in this area of Nashville. It's down on 8th Avenue. It's called Douglas Corner. And man, they have a writer's night every single Tuesday. And I went there every single Tuesday and I'd wait for hours to play. And, I would never talk to anyone, and I would just sit off to the side by myself because I was very nervous about, coming off as too ambitious, too eager, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't want to go up to somebody. If someone, that I enjoyed playing, I'd, go tell them, hey man, really enjoyed it. But that's kind of where I'd leave it. I wouldn't be like, hey, I wasn't really into co-writing yet. So I was like, hey, we should write together. Hey man, what are you doing musically that I can like that sort of thing. I was very, very skittish about kind of pressing myself, and I'm still not very good about I want to say like
just asking directly.
I am the same way, man.
Yeah. Even with like asking you guys to do this, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it practice and really, like you said, when it comes to relationships, it usually will work out if it's supposed to work out.
Certainly.
But you were saying, sitting over there and waiting. I think the first part of networking that I've noticed is really just to be seen.
Totally.
It's not even really what you're saying or if you even talk, like just be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're seen enough, it's funny, especially in Nashville, you'll look at somebody and go, I feel like I should know you.
Yeah.
And you've actually never talked to them.
Yeah, totally.
So that's a good first step. If mm-hmm. you're having a hard time, I think, you know, going up and introducing and stuff like that, just, you know, hey, just go out, be seen.
Yeah, absolutely. So
that's great.
Yeah, man.
What about the, that's what you would tell yourself, mm-hmm. is what about the best advice somebody else has ever given you?
Man, I, so while I was a student, in college, I did the music business program, and one of the, directors of the program was named Steve Dance. And he was a cool cat, man. He was this Buddhist that, was a jazz pianist, and his dad had been the director of the, UGA's marching band, and very musical. Had this crazy story behind him, and I was doing a project on him actually for a jazz studies class, and I got to learn his life story and all this stuff. And he imparted some wisdom on me that someone had passed down to him, and it was that no matter what you're listening to, you should try to take something away from it. Mm. You don't have to necessarily enjoy what you're listening to, but if you find yourself in a situation where you're listening to someone that you don't necessarily enjoy, try to find something in their music that you can take away from it. Like whether it be, you know, maybe the song's awful, but they have a really cool one line of lyrics, or maybe they have a really cool chord structure or yeah. chord change or whatever. But there's always something you could take from it. Any sort of genre, free jazz that just sounds like the band's warming up. You know what I mean? Listen to that and just try to find something in there. Maybe one person does a run of notes. It's really cool. You've never heard before. Maybe someone's at a writer's round that, you know, they're new to the game and they don't know what they're doing yet, but maybe you can like listen to what they're doing and you see why they put a certain word somewhere else. And I don't know, that sort of thing. So that was incredibly helpful because that changed the way I listened to a lot of music, music that I never really cared for. You know, if I'm just, you know, even if I'm, you know, sitting in a lobby and it's waiting room music,
right.
Listen to it and see, man, if you can take something away from it.
That's a great piece of advice. I hadn't thought of it that way. I had a mentor tell me one time that when you're doing something, you know, even if you completely bomb at it, you know, you will learn something, even if it's what you shouldn't do.
Exactly.
It was given to me that way. Now you're putting it in a great, almost a better perspective of takeaway that you could use, even if you don't like 99% of it.
Right.
There's 0.1% that you can learn, and you probably still apply the same advice, that if you see somebody making, I guess, quote unquote, mistakes, and learn from them, so you don't have to.
Yeah,
hey,
exactly.
There you go. Right?
Yeah,
even if you're learning, like, what that, not
that,
to do.
That just made, like the new guy on stage. Like, you learn, like, he says something between songs. You're like, dude, no. So, but then you're like, oh, have I done that before?
Right. Oh gosh.
Like, oh man, because you see it from the other side. You're on stage. You like in the moment. You say something. You kind of just fly past it. Don't even realize it.
Right.
You're on the other side in the audience. To like, you know, there's six people in the audience, and some guy on stage says something. Whatever it is, just makes the room feel awkward. You're like, okay, dude,
hey,
note to self.
Note to
never
self.
Never do that.
Oh, great piece of advice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, Drew, finish this statement.
Ooh, okay.
If I really, or actually, Donald, if you really knew me, you would know what?
So if you really knew me, we've already discussed the food thing.
Right.
So
well, I feel like a lot of people
that.
Know that about you.
That's a good point.
So
that's a pretty widespread.
I love that.
Yeah. So man, that's a good question. If you really knew me,
and it's a PG show, by the way.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just want to throw that out.
Yeah. That's how I was gonna, like, it's PG. It's like, if you really knew me, you knew what's on my Netflix queue.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. If you really knew me, if you really knew me, you'd know how long I've been at this.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I woke up last week and decided to get it going.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, you do other things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are musicians, artists, writers. It's a necessity in Nashville, mm-hmm. because pursuing a dream doesn't always just go, hey, by the way, here's your salary and benefits.
Oh man. Right.
Right.
Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a grind, man.
So if you're not, I mean, and you know, you're out there a lot, but you know, like you said, just coming into town, maybe meeting you in a different setting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they wouldn't know that, but that's, you've been out of this like a long time.
Yeah, man. So I've been in Nashville for 5.5 years now. And, it's, you know, when I first got here, it was hitting the pavement and playing every single open mic and writer's round and any opportunity that I was given to play at any club, any show, any amount of time, whatever, you jump at it. And whether it was in Nashville or it was in Atlanta or Charlotte,
yeah,
anywhere. And then before that, and all the places in Athens, and playing all the empty rooms and all that stuff. And it's it all kind of just kind of keeps you going, because it reminds you why you're doing it. Like, you know, you play a good show or you play a bad show, you look back on all the other experiences and you kind of,
yeah,
you tell yourself, hey, I mean, I got into this for a reason, and it was for a good reason.
Hey, and you pull from those experiences, even the bad ones.
Totally.
When you said playing like the empty rooms and stuff, mm-hmm, like some of that, it can be really awkward and tough. Oh, yeah. Right.
Totally.
But it's also one of those things that if you can do that,
yeah,
it's almost that confidence builder that if you can do that, you can do any situation that you go into, you're like, yeah, I can handle it. And it's because you've been there before. That's totally awesome. And you know, a lot of times we'd love to skip that process, right? But I don't know if you can.
Well, it's, oh yeah, absolutely. It's that's a good point. Like the skipping of all that stuff. It would be nice just to go from, you know, picking up a guitar to, you know, selling out a stadium. But
right.
Stapleton even touched on it in his acceptance speech, like one of the thousands of awards he won in the past year. I think it was the CMAs, I believe. Like the last award he won, it's like, you know, he thanked everybody already, you know. So like he had this one award that he had to, you know, really dig down and realize, man, what I'm going to say. So
yeah,
he thanked everyone that had been there in all the empty bar basements to see him play and all that stuff. And man, that, yeah, resonates so hard with everyone, because like we've all been there, man. And like, and I say we've all been there, like I'm not still doing that. Yeah. Like everyone still plays, even like runs of shows where, man, you play a sold out show one night, the next night you come in and there's 15 people there, five of which are the people working at the bar,
right,
and that sort of thing. Like that, it's just, it's part of the grind, and it keeps you humble, and it makes you realize that, you know, like none of this is guaranteed for any amount of time.
Sure.
You can have a number one song and then never have anything again. And,
yeah,
you know, 3 months from now, people aren't going to be like as stoked on you as, yeah, they were, you know, the day after the number one.
Which is why I tell people that I ask, and not that I'm a writer or musician, but a lot of friends will know that I know a lot of you guys. And I say, look, it's not that I have personal advice. I just say, just know it's a lifestyle.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, and are you okay with a lifestyle?
Right.
Because it is a lifestyle.
You have to be in love with the process.
That's right.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I was, so after I left South last night, we went down, Tin Roof on Tuesday night has, mm-hmm, Revival.
Yeah.
And, you know, just in both places that are literally four doors apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny you brought up Stapleton, because he was not an overnight success. I know it seems that way to the rest of the world, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Tell it, and I'm listening to two or three people on stage that could just as easily be Chris Stapleton.
Yeah, man.
I mean, you had like Fanning up there and,
yeah,
David. Oh my gosh. They were like, and I was listening to them in general.
So
I'm like
good.
Thinking of Chris Stapleton and going, they are just as.
Yeah, man. I mean, Stapleton, I'm not, incredibly well versed in his history, but I believe he had in the early 2000s, he had cuts with like Adele and like huge names. I mean, mm-hmm, he's been writing, which is the crazy part. Like people write for decades before they get their first cut. Well, he got his first couple of big name cuts 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So he's been just starting to get cuts 15 years ago. And then 2 years ago, really started making it like an imprint with as an artist.
Sure.
But again, that's just starting to make it. That doesn't mean he wasn't doing it before. And dude, it's just, that's why I think people feel such a gravity towards him.
Yeah.
Because especially in this town, people that understand that how hard he's worked and all that stuff, and to see him do as well as he's doing now, it's
right,
been a really cool thing to see. And the same thing goes for so many artists,
sure,
out there. They've been doing so much for so long, but once they blow up fast.
Yeah.
And so people are like, oh, it's an overnight success. Well, man, you didn't see like the 10 years of like touring around in a Toyota Camry,
right,
that he had to do in order to get even to the stage where people would want to start supporting,
right,
him and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I say him. Or her, either one.
Sure. Yeah. And that's another reason why I do this, because it's frustrating, believe it or not, even though I love to, that I have the opportunity and chance to hear all you guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, when you hear something like this, you want the rest of the world to hear it.
Oh yeah,
I think
for
that's
sure.
Why, I mean, you know, it's for so many people that, you know, friends that have showcases and stuff, you know, we support, and I've had, mm-hmm, friends of mine that live outside of Nashville that go, does your Facebook, is it even yours? And I remember when like, you know, Kip and all of them were just coming up.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm just posting daily, you know.
Yeah.
But it's because, you know, you fall in love with them and their music and you just want the rest of the world to hear it.
Well, then, like, people like you are just as invaluable as anything else, man. Just like having the support of your friends or even people that barely know you but just want to support your music.
Right.
Like, that stuff's awesome, man, because we were talking earlier about how you're starting to get downloads from people that aren't in your friend circle.
Right.
And I remember when I got my first thumbs down on my first YouTube video. I loved it, man. Like, I was like, that means that someone that didn't know me.
That's right.
Looked at this video completely without, you know, maybe someone that I knew told them whatever. They didn't know me at all.
Right.
They watched it and they didn't like it. But that's awesome because they didn't know me and somehow they still went and watched it.
Right.
And so that's the sort of thing. It's like
organically people were finding you.
Yeah. And so when you have that sort of network behind you of people that either know you or don't know you, but either way supporting you, it makes it, man, it's a really cool feeling when it's, whether it's someone singing your song or whether it's someone giving you a thumbs down on your YouTube video. It's like, it's a very cool feeling and it's scary, man.
Which, by the way, is inevitable, right? Like,
it has to be.
Hey, you have to have Mother Teresa had haters.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is what got me to go out there and like dare to suck.
Yeah.
Because somebody gets said, Donald, like the only way you're not going to have critics is if you do nothing. Because there's nothing you can do that somebody somewhere is not going to go.
Yeah, that was dumb. He shouldn't have done that. Yeah.
Fortunately, one of my gifts in life, and it's, you know, it's a God-given gift, so don't be jealous, but I am really good at making a fool of myself.
There we go.
So, all right. Yeah. It's a gift.
Totally. Yeah.
Well, dude, that's awesome. And hey, I want to hear, you know, I love talking. I can talk all day, man. But the really point of this is to maybe get you to set up another one of those favorite songs of yours,
man.
And play it for us.
I got another one for you for sure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Fun, for sure.
I hope I didn't bomb those questions too bad.
I don't know. I
go back.
I'm grading papers later on the night. Say,
well,
so
no, when you go back there and listen to it, you can just cut all of it.
I have my
out.
Red pen.
Yeah. You just do an impression of my voice and answer the questions however you want.
That would be impossible.
Man, so yeah, so this next song is kind of it's been a very lighthearted interview, but the next song is kind of a downer, man. It's a song that I wrote with a guy named Levi Humman, who is an incredible, incredible talent coming up right now. And he and I wrote this a few years back, and it's kind of about a conflicted toxic couple that, you know, as much as they want to like pull apart from each other, they keep coming back even though they're not good together, that sort of thing. I think everyone kind of knows a couple like that, and hopefully haven't been in a relationship but may have been in one like that. But yeah, this is called Whiskey and Wine.
Hell was a heaven she couldn't find, and he was addicted to the pain of leaving her behind. She was his whiskey, he was her wine. He's playing piano, writing another breakup song. She's in bed with a stranger, just trying to stay strong. Both lonely nights full of whiskey and wine. And an empty glass shatters on the floor like a broken heart. Get hold of head in their hands and eyes shut close. Well, it's hard sometimes to fall in love, I know. There's no rest in peace, drink to ease the soul. And like a melody that falls between the lines and words that never rhyme, well, you can't mix whiskey and wine. They lie to themselves, thinking they can just move on, and already miss the sting like a needle in the arm. If they only love the hurt, is it really love at all? and an empty glass shatters on the floor like a broken heart. Can't hold on, head in their hands, and eyes shut closed. Well, it's hard sometimes to fall in love, I know. There's no rest in peace, drink to ease the soul. And like a melody that falls between the lines and words that never rhyme, well, you can't mix whiskey and wine. Yes, it's hard sometimes to fall in love, I know. There's no rest in peace, drink to ease the soul. And like a melody that falls between the lines and words that don't rhyme, well, you can't mix the whiskey and the wine.
God, that's so good, man.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
I mean, the amount of talent is unbelievable, but going to the lyrics of that song, I mean, it relates. It's I a have deep been. One, man. Yeah. Let me tell you something. Individually, we are both great people. Together, it's like a nuclear bomb.
Right. Yeah,
and
dude.
I know those.
Yeah, man. And that's why that song's kind of, like I said, it's kind of a downer song, but it's so relatable, man. Because I feel like I said, hopefully not, but like, I feel like we've either been in a relationship or we know someone that has, and it's so tough to watch.
Yeah.
It's tough and it's impossible to be a part of, but it's like, you're just for some reason pulled back to each other. And it's just, it's a bummer.
And, you know, it makes really good though. I mean, if there is a positive, let's look at the positive 1% totally. That we pull out of it.
Yeah.
It makes really good for light songwriting.
Yeah, man. Yeah, dude.
Are you tragedy talking about like the emotions the art, that are you like,
know? That sort of thing. Yeah.
Right. God. Yeah, and that's, I mean, your voice is awesome. I love
thanks,
it, Drew.
Man.
And I appreciate you coming by and
thanks
doing that, man.
Me
it means
again,
a lot.
For
and
sure.
I know everybody loves, you know, hearing you and obviously.
Oh, thank you, man.
So it's probably about time for a hot and ready.
What time is it, man? Is it still morning? It doesn't matter.
If they're
open, if they're in business, I'm in business. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, hey, thanks for coming back.
Absolutely,
but I know
man.
That you have a ton more of more than two songs. And so if you don't mind, let's do this again, right?
Literally anytime, man. Absolutely, dude.
And hey, guys, if you guys are in town, especially on Tuesday nights, the South, look out, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's from 8 to 10.
Yeah, definitely check
Tuesdays,
it out.
Yeah.
And then if you want to find Drew, tell us what's the best way, man.
Standard social media. So website is iamdrewdixon.com. That's iamdrewdixon.com.
Yeah.
And then all of my social media is all the same thing, man. I am Drew Dixon. It's going to be Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, everything, dude.
All those things. And even though he said he loved the thumb down, don't give him a thumb down.
No thumb there. Yeah. I mean, I appreciate you watching. But come on, give me a little more love, you know?
Hey, man, appreciate it. Let's do it again.
Yes, sir.
See you, bud.
See you, man.
This has been Hits Collecting Dust. Please support this podcast and the artists featured by going to iTunes, subscribing, and leaving us a review.